Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services to order. It is Tuesday, February 5th, and I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 22. Could you bring us up to date on that, Committee Administrator?
Thank you. Madam Administrator, members of the committee, Senate Bill 22, we had the public hearing yesterday. You'll recall that this was a lot of technical fixes, which removes the references to the Eastern Oregon Training Center and references to the operation of the State Training Center by the Department of Human Services. We had a dash one amendment that adds some tighter language where we insert the language in cooperation with the county. We did not have a fiscal on the dash one at that point. We do today. There is no fiscal impact on the dash one, and the committee can choose to move forward with the bill if they choose.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cruz.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 22.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 22. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any opposition to the amendment? Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 22 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 22 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steiner-Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Milk?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
And Chair Lana Sanderson?
Aye. The bill passes, and Senator Knope needs to carry this bill. It's extremely important.
No. I'll carry this one.
No.
We have another one.
We have another
him.
One. For oh, you have
oh,
another
boy.
One.
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
I told Madam Chair I'm voting no on every bill until I should be hazed.
So Senator Cruz is going to carry this bill. And with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 22. And I'm just going to go into a work session. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 166 and bring us up to date on why we're...
what we need to do. Okay, Madam Administrator, Senate Bill 166, you'll recall we heard yesterday, which is requiring an insurer to elect to communicate by electronic means, leaving an option for the insured to select a paper option of communications. There was a little bit of concern. We didn't have the agency here, so we have Anthony Behrens here today from DCBS, and we also have Lori Freeman here, Legislative Counsel.
So both Lori and Anthony, would you come forward? And it was Senator Shields that had some questions regarding this and wanted to know where the agency was on this bill, basically.
I think that's right. Are we doing something very significant here that we should have the perspective of the agency? Does the agency comfortable with this approach?
For the record, my name is Anthony Behrens. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Department of Consumer and Business Services Insurance Division. Chair Moss Anderson and Senator Shields, members of the committee. So this bill is interesting, and maybe Lori can talk about this a little more, but the way, at least one of the reads we have at the department is that the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, which is ORS 84, would still actually apply at least to part of the bill. And that's the part where the bill says that carriers or insurers may provide notices required by law electronically. All of our notices are required to be in writing. So what the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act does is says essentially that a consumer would have to opt in to electronic notices. So for any notice that is required to be in writing. So this bill, without some reference to that act, would seem to not really do much as far as changing that. They would still have to opt in. It just seems like a carrier would then have to give them an opportunity to opt out. Is at least one read. It's is how we look at it.
Okay. So are you saying the bill needs a little more work to make it do what it, the proponents are actually intending it to do?
Yeah, it's my understanding that the proponents are hoping for an opt out, and which would mean that consumers are automatically
electronic
unless they opt out. Is my understanding what it's trying to do, and maybe Lori can talk a little bit more about whether it does. I don't know.
Okay. Lori.
Lori Freeman, Office of Legislative Counsel, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. This is one of those rare cases where someone gave me language and I did it. So I don't really know what the intent was. It seemed to work, but frankly, I can't really say what they were intending to accomplish because they never told me that. But I think there's two different ways to read it. And one is that to the extent that there is a requirement in law that says a notice has to be in writing, then you look to 84070 and it says if the law requires it to be in writing, you have to have all these other special procedures. Well, one way to read this is that this is saying you don't have to have a notice in writing, is that it can be electronic from the get-go, and so therefore it's not subject to 84070. On the other hand, the Department of Consumer and Business Services are going to be the ones interpreting it, so it should probably be more clear on the record if what they're trying to do is create an opt-out.
Okay, so can I have John C. Powell or John Powell? John C. Powell, there you are. So clarify all this for us.
Yes, Senator Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record again, John C. Powell representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. And Anthony did explain that correct. The goal of the bill is to create when a insured applies for health insurance, the opportunity right there to say, do you want to receive your insurance notices other than non-renewal and cancellation notices electronically or paper? So that's what we thought the bill did. We were not aware of the ORS 84. So it may need some work, and we're happy to work to make sure that intent is clear.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I like what you're trying to do. I don't really have a problem with it. I just want to make sure that if we pass it out of here, it actually doesn't run into more roadblocks when you're actually trying to implement it.
Is there any other? So what I would like you to do, did you want to talk?
Well, no, this kind of screws up the plan.
Well, we have a hidden agenda.
That has nothing to do with the bill, by the way.
That's all right.
Do we need to reopen the work session on some?
No. What we need to do is clarify the intent. And so if now that Lori has Mr. Powell here, you know, can we do something to clarify that intent?
Well, Madam Chair, yes. The intent's really clear in the bill. The question is there a conflict in other statutes that needs to be dealt with?
Yeah, Chairman Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, I don't think it's entirely clear. I think it could be more clear,
okay. But
now that I know what their intent was, then I can do it right, and I will do that.
Great.
Okay. I mean, Madam Chair, my comfort was that they're allowing the customer the option, and you know, they, you know, it's not like you have to opt in. You have a choice at the front end, and I think that's appropriate.
So how soon could we get, could we have the amendment by Thursday?
Chair Monis-Anderson, I believe you could.
Okay.
Madam Chair, don't know if we'd have a fiscal.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Let's move it to Thursday. If we get it enough, we can still roll it to Monday if we don't have the fiscal. So, yeah. All right. With that, any other discussion? Sorry to...
We had a really good plan.
Okay, but all right. Thank you very much. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 166. And I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 106. And Sandy will describe the bill to us.
It does have a South Dakota referral, so...
Senate Bill 106 comes to us at the request of the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners. It's allowing the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners and the State Board of Pharmacy to establish certain fees by rule. It distinguishes chiropractic assistant from other ancillary personnel used by chiropractors. This has an emergency clause, is effective on passage, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And it was also at the request of the State Board of Pharmacy. We do have, that's it. We're only in a public hearing.
And
I apologize.
That's 106. Okay.
Yes.
So Dave Matigue, Gary Schnabel, and Douglas Dick, would you please come up, all three of you?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave McTeague, Executive Director, Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Our office is in South Salem. Senate Bill 106 is a companion measure to the Board of Chiropractic Board's budget, which is tentatively scheduled, and I'll correct my testimony, for February 13th. And we have some budget proposals down in Ways and Means to help us deal with some pressing issues faced by the chiropractic profession. And to fund those proposals, it's necessary to institute a modest fee increase for the chiropractic profession, the chiropractors, and chiropractic assistants. And that would be to help us create a half-time staff position for our for a chiropractic professional on the board. Unlike the Board of Pharmacy, we don't have a professional on staff who is a chiropractor, and we desperately need that. We need more money for legal costs and contested case costs for all the complaints and investigations and contested case proceedings we're involved in. This measure would eliminate the statutory limits on fees. Board of Pharmacy and Chiropractic Board are the only two health boards that still have these limits in statute. Would allow us to raise fees by administrative rule, subject to the post-review process of the legislature and the legislature's budget process. This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We'd like you to send it down there so this can be considered alongside our budgets should they be receptive to our proposals.
Questions? What do the how are fees established with the Board of Nursing, OMA, and the dental?
Our understanding is they go through an administrative rulemaking process, public comment, and then they adopt. Our understanding is that we're the two boards that still have limits in statute. We can adopt your administrative rule up to our limits. And so we're at a chiropractic license renewal right now is $300. So we're capped out at that. If we wanted to raise it to $350, we need a statutory change to allow us to do that.
Perfect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gary Schnabel. I'm Executive Director for the Board of Pharmacy. And I'll be brief. The bill does the same thing for the Board of Pharmacy as it does for chiropractic examiners. We have the fee cap. It's a little bit misleading to say we adopt our fee increases by rule. Technically, it is done by rule, but it goes through Ways and Means and with the budget process. So anytime we we want to raise a fee, it has to go through Ways and Means. The Board of Pharmacy has a request this year currently to raise fees for the pharmaceutical wholesalers and manufacturers. And it's with our budget, and it goes through Ways and Means. So I didn't put any of those numbers in my testimony. I've got them here if you want to talk about them. But
what
this
bill
is not.
What are the fees?
The fees currently are $400, and the plan is to raise it to $800. In the past 24 years, the fees have been raised twice on the wholesalers and manufacturers. So it's really overdue. It's actually phase two of a fee increase that we started in 2011. And in 2011, the budget and management thought that it would be better to not raise all the fees at one time, but do half in 11 and half in 13. It's not exactly half, but it's part of the group. So we did the pharmacies, pharmacists, and pharmacy technicians in 2011. And the proposal at Ways and Means this year is to do pharmaceutical manufacturers and wholesalers.
And tell me what, again, it is for the chiropractors?
What it is now?
It's for a license renewal for a chiropractic physician with an active license is $300 a year. And our proposal is to raise it to $350. Okay. And then we have some small increases for chiropractic assistants. Those have not been increased since the inception of that program in 1991. So we want to increase the application $25. So it would be go from $25 to $50. And for annual renewals, another a $25 increase, and that would be go from $50 to $75.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, my name is Douglas Dick. I'm a public member of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. I've been on the board for 4 years, and I'm basically would just be echoing mostly what the both directors have said. The fee increase is kind of just paralleling the compliance case increases. We've had a substantial amount in just the last 2 years. Our caseload has doubled. And these fees would help you know process and investigate these cases, and we do have support of the Oregon Chiropractic Association, and so as a public member, I think it's a good idea and get it to the Ways and Means and move forward. So that's really all I have to say. I just really support it and see the need for it. And I'm a private business person paying license fees in a lot of different avenues. And I understand that's just the cost of doing business and don't see any conflict with that.
Okay, Senator Steiner here.
Can I just clarify something that I think I heard? Currently, if I as a physician, MD physician, I get my license through the Oregon Medical Board, and if the Oregon Medical Board decides that they want to increase my licensure fee, then they just do it by rule, but they have to go through Ways and Means when they do it, just so that there's some kind of public legislative oversight, right? And so they can't just do it by administrative rule with a public comment period. They actually have to come to Ways and Means and say, hey, we're going to do this. But can you, I'm a little confused at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward. That's correct. It is possible for that fee to be implemented temporarily if it goes through budget management. But at the next legislative session, the earliest legislative session, and it has to go through and be ratified by Ways and Means.
Right. As part of our budget process, we produce a revenue forecast, and that says this is what we think we're going to get in revenues for the next 2 years. So that's reviewed by all the budget analysts.
So can I ask a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
So currently, the difference is that the Oregon Medical Board doesn't have to have a policy bill to increase its fee. They just go straight to Ways and Means as part of their budget, and they say, here's our budget for the coming biennium, and it includes licensure fees of this much. Are you cool with it? And Ways and Means says yes or no and negotiates with them. But for the chiropractors and the pharmacists, for you all to raise your fees, you have to have a policy bill that comes to us first, and then it goes to me wearing my other hat, Health and Human Services sub. And we hear it over there, too. Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And I would add to that that you also have something called the Senate Bill 333 process. So all the fees that were increased during the interim come before the legislature for a blanket approval. If somebody's got a real concern about a particular fee, and it's happened in the past, the legislature can still say, we're going to undo that particular fee increase. So you also have that backstop.
So there are some significant checks and balances available.
Oh, yeah.
Even if we make this change, there are checks and balances available.
Correct.
There are a number of members that are very opposed to any kind of fee, as you know, and there are some members that vote against any every bill that has anything to do with fees.
Madam Chair, I would maybe take a slight exception to that, and if the people paying the fees see the reason for it and they feel it's justified, that's another matter, but which does not always happen.
And we as a policy committee are more looking at the policy, and there's a number of issues. There's no work session on this bill, and there are a number of issues that we want to discuss with the health licensing, the overall health licensing, various entities in under the health licensing board. So that's why there's no work session, because I think we need to know exactly where all of these bills are going to, how they interact with one another. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to remind the committee that this bill doesn't raise any fees. It's just removing the maximum. Another bill going through Ways and Means would be the fee bill. Just to clarify.
Okay, thank you.
This just takes
thank
a cap
you.
Away.
I guess, okay. Madam Chair, if
yes,
I may.
Yes, please.
What I would say is this, and I agree with you, we need to be looking at the health licensing boards overall, and that's a separate conversation. But as part of that, I think anything we can do to standardize how the health licensing boards work is in everybody's best interest, because everybody gets confused otherwise. So if we've already given, in principle, my perspective would be that if we've already given authority to the Board of Nursing and the Medical Board to do this straight through Ways and Means as part of their biennial budget, then it would seem to me that as part of this sort of standardization, let's make sure we're doing this the same for every health profession, this would make some sense. I'm not saying for sure how I'd vote on this, but in principle, it seems to make some sense as part of this process.
Okay. Any other discussion?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
And is that all we have for this particular bill?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 106 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 107. Madam Administrator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 107 comes at the request of the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. It's allowing the nursing home, several of the boards that are housed in the licensing agency, nursing home administrators, respiratory therapists, polysomnographer, technology licensing board, cosmetology, body art practitioners, to establish specific requirements for licensing and temporary licensing. So
welcome.
There are multiple aspects.
Welcome, Holly, and welcome to your new role.
Thank you very much, Chair Mona Sanderson.
You were great with the Board of Nursing.
Thank you.
And now we have you in a new role, so
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Chairman Senator Mona Sanderson and Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm the Interim Executive Director for the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. To my left is Sammy Patnode, who is a policy analyst with our agency, and she's been with the agency for 17 years. I have been with the agency for less than 3 months. So she is the historical expert and will go through the detail of the bill. But since this is the first time before this committee in this capacity, having spent the last 5 years with the Board of Nursing, I would just like to say for the committee that the mission for this agency is very similar to healthcare boards in that it is to protect the public. We have oversight of 11 boards, including a council for hearing aids. We also regulate, among those boards, close to 70,000 different licenses and authorizations for almost 37,000 individuals. We are an other funded agency and have a budget of $6.6 million. We are here today to address some issues with five of our boards. We believe they're very straightforward. We believe that they will benefit our boards and benefit the public. I will turn it over to Sammy to go through that detail, and certainly we are both open to questions for anything about the agency or this bill that the committee would like to ask.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
If I could, before we get into that, what is a polysomnographic technologist?
That's a great question.
Do you sleep well or not?
Yes, huh? Yes, Chair. Chair Mona Sanderson and Senator Cruz, having to do with primarily sleep apnea and very kind of growing field, but a very small board, and needed to have some licensure standards. So they
so that would basically be the sleep centers that are springing up. Okay.
Yes,
there's
sir.
One in Rose Bergen. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's correct.
Why didn't they call it sleep?
I know. Because it's medicine and we like long, complicated words that keep you guys from knowing what's going on.
Okay.
It's important.
Okay. Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, Sammy Patnode, policy analyst for the Health Licensing Agency. As Holly said, this bill does several small things for some of our programs, starting with the Nursing Home Administrators Board. Currently, the way it works, if somebody comes through endorsement for licensing, we can't require them to take a test. What we'd like to do is require them to take a test, especially in the area of Department of Human Services, SDS, or Senior and Disabled Services. The bill would allow us to go ahead and have them take those tests. The next item is for polysomnographic technologists. Since it is an emerging profession and the bill last session only allowed for education, we'd like to open that up for some on-the-job training, because that's really how people are getting their education. There's only a small number of education programs in the state, I think three. The next one is for the Board of Cosmetology. It would basically open up the scope of practice, but at the same time limit it to allow for estheticians who are skincare technicians to do eyelash services, and they are trained during school to do that, and we'd like to have them allowed to do that. The next one is for body art practitioners. We have about 200 temporary earlobe piercers, but they only they only do the soft lower tissue of the ear, and they don't need all the training that the full body piercers do, so adding a separate field of practice would let us limit what they have to, what they are, need to be educated and examined on. And the last one is for hearing aid specialists, but allow us to have a temporary licensing requirement for them, which was eliminated in 2009 by accident. The last thing is a professional organization contacted us, brought forward that there was in the Advisory Council for Hearing Aid, there was a mistitle from the Association for Speech Pathology and Audiology, so on Section 7, Line 28. So that may need to be possibly changed. And if any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Could you just let us know how you would determine if the training that a polysomnographer had undergone in an on-job situation was adequate? Is there an examination, or how does that work?
Yes, currently there is a national, Senator Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. Currently there is a national testing center with the Board of Polysomnographic Technologists examination that they take, and they are required to have 18 months of experience or a degree in polysomnography. So, yes, there is a threshold that they would have to meet.
And may I ask one other question?
Thank you very much. So, just to make sure I understand the issue about earlobe piercing, being the mother of two girls. This means that when I take my girls to Claire's and they want to get their earlobes pierced, they're not going to have, those women will have this limited licensure that just allows them to do that and a limited amount of training, as opposed to having to go through the whole thing as if they were doing cartilage stuff too. Although I think a lot of them do the cartilage stuff too.
And the cartilage goes high up. Explain the anatomy of the ear again.
Okay.
The lower lobe.
This one.
And then the cartilage somewhere starts.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, it would be limited to the lower part of the lobe, the soft tissue, not up in the cartilage. And currently there's 1,000 hours of training that's required for a full body piercing specialist to do so. Hmm. And that they have to do a full anatomy and theory and several 900 applications, I believe. Has this been vetted with your licensees at all? I mean, is it on their radar that you're proposing this? I'm just wondering, especially for the Long-Term Care Association or whoever, the Nursing Home Administrator Board, I mean, this is a huge change for them. And with the growing baby boomers, I mean, you know, right now, anyone can be an administrator, and I'm just wondering how this will affect the who we have now.
Senator Moniz-Anderson, members of the committee, what this does is there are currently requirements to be a nursing home administrator. This just would allow us to test them on Oregon requirements, mostly for DHS, senior and disabled services, and or the Oregon Health Licensing Agency rules around nursing home administrators. But yes, they have been fully vetted, and we've went through the board, we've given them notice, and this is actually something they brought forward.
Excellent.
And they were agreed with that.
Okay. And those are the only questions I have. Any others? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Well, now that we're into the, we've got the body art stuff here again, and I'm reading down to the dermal implanting and scarification and the issues we had a couple years ago.
Yeah.
We got reasonable resolution to that whole thing, or?
Yes. Senator Moniz-Anderson and Senator Cruz, members of the committee, I do have to say that Sammy Patnode has led the charge in terms of organizing those standards, going through, putting that board together. We're still putting some of the last testing requirements together.
Okay.
But it's moved along. When I talked to Department of Administrative Services about this position, the genital piercing topic did not come up. So I'm new to that myself. And it's,
yeah, hopefully not.
Fortunately, I guess. But anyway, it's very challenging for our agency. But we do have a very engaged board, and they've guided us through it with Sammy's help. So.
Okay. Madam Chair, it's just the dermal implanting and a few things like that, the pictures we saw.
I know.
I mean.
They were gross.
Yeah. It's.
Consider yourself lucky that you don't have to do exams on some of those people, which I do.
Yes. But Chair Moniz-Anderson and Senator Cruz, members of the committee, at least we are making an effort to standardize some of those training requirements and provide some standards. I do think Oregon is the lead in that regard. So it's been somewhat challenging, but I think helpful for the public.
Definitely. It's sometimes hard to keep up with weird stuff young people want to do, isn't it?
Well, at this point, you're the only two signed up, and to your knowledge, there's no opposition whatsoever?
Senator Moniz-Anderson, that's correct. We have no opposition. We had the one name of the one organization that came up and said that we need to remove some of the words. It's in Section 7. We know that the exact line that needs to be changed. So, however, the committee would choose for us to make that one change, we would like to do that.
So they need an amendment.
Yeah.
So you'll need an amendment?
I believe so. Yes.
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 Okay. All right. Another good bill for Senator Knope.
Oh, and I have so many questions.
I really don't know.
Senator Moniz-Anderson, I look down, and here is the testimony that was sitting right in front of me that I should have handed out to each of you.
So oh, we have it.
Okay, you have it.
Okay, so as soon as we receive the amendment, give it to Sandy. And or do you submit the amendment? Or yeah, and then when we get it, she will get it on for a work session. I don't think we have any problems with this bill from what I hear. So for a work session, okay.
Great. Thank you so much. We
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank All you. Right. With that, I will close the work session. Nope. I mean the public hearing on 107 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 108. Sandy, would you bring us up to date on this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 108 comes to you at the request of the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Medicine. It authorizes the Board of Naturopathic Medicine to require a person disciplined by the board to pay reasonable costs of the disciplinary hearing. It also modifies the language relating to prohibited acts.
Okay, and this is Annie Walsh.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Montes Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Walsh. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Naturopathic Medicine. I'm here to ask for support of Senate Bill 108. Senate Bill 108 will authorize the board to require persons disciplined by the board to pay the reasonable costs of those disciplinary proceedings. We've been licensing naturopaths since 1927, and the licensing fees in all of this time has been the support of the board for any operational functions of the board. This includes investigations and contested hearings when they happen. Let me get a breath here. A contested case can run the board anywhere from $2,500 to, we had one a couple biennium ago that cost us over $60,000, and it didn't ever even go to hearing. It just, we ended up settling because it was just getting too expensive for the licensee to proceed. After those two incidents, we had to, in 2011, raise licensing fees because we didn't, all of our cash reserve was gone by these two hearings from the bienniums previously. It just doesn't seem fair that those licensees that are compliant with the laws and maintain good, healthy practice attitudes should have to pay the costs for the few who contest their discipline. The board does, in their investigations, I believe the board is very thorough and does a thorough, complete investigation on each case. And when a violation is established, we make every effort to work with the licensee's attorney or the representative, to try to settle so that the licensee is aware and holds themselves responsible for their actions. And yet we hope to turn out a good doctor with the resolve of a settlement, which is what it would be called. Sometimes they just don't want to settle. They may have malpractice insurance that will cover them, because any discipline on their license, any final action is a permanent mark on their license, and that's by law. That's not our choice. And so they will, you know, they will contest it, and we will try to work with them, but the licensees are the ones who end up paying for that from our side, whereas the licensee who's got the malpractice insurance is having their insurance carrier pay that. Excuse me. There was a concern in the last, this is the second session I'm bringing this bill forward. The last session there was a concern that the board would go renegade and just start picking on doctors and charging fees for whatever. And I need to tell you that the board doesn't do that. And if you are licensed by a board, you know that there's a level of oversight that the licensee has places to turn if they feel they're being unfairly disciplined. But the Board of Naturopathic Medicine, because it's such a small profession, when a complaint comes to the board and it's investigated, the report that's given to the board has the doctor's name redacted. And that's so that there's no bias in the action the board decides to take. They look at the allegations or the violations and determine action from that. So the licensee who's upset with the board for disciplining them, period, doesn't really seem to understand that it's not the doctor we're disciplining, it's the actions that we're trying to correct. So that's really all I just would like to get some support for our compliant licensees. And as the profession grows, the complaints are going to grow as well, and it's just going to continue to be in another two biennium. If we have contested cases that cost a lot, we're going to be looking at another fee increase.
Okay, well, I would like to know, you know, we just talked a little on the last bill how we want to standardize all of these boards operate. And I don't know how the other boards operate.
This is how OMB does it.
medical board does it this way.
This way, yeah, that's in the bill?
Yes. This is standardizing what OMB does. I don't know about the board of nursing.
Dentistry board does it that way. Board of nursing does not do that. Physical therapist licensing board does. Let me think. Council, the dental and medical both do it. And I talked to Patrick a couple weeks ago, or maybe it's been a month or two now, but it seems.
You said the dental board does?
Pardon me, yes.
The dental board?
Board of medicine. And those are the boards we use when we went to Ledge Council to get the language put into our statute.
Yeah, it's standardizing what they do.
Well, actually, I'm wondering why we can't get the nursing board on board.
Chair Monson-Anderson, Senator Steiner Hayward, I'm surprised that they don't have that. It seems like it would.
It can be part of our ongoing conversation about the health licensing boards.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
My only concern with this, and I think this is reasonable, would be, okay, you know, they go to disciplinary hearing. If they win, are they still going to have to pay the cost? It should be loser pays. I mean, if they go and win, and that would be the OMA as well, then they shouldn't have to bear the cost of the proceedings.
Well, Chair Monson-Anderson, Senator Cruz, I guess the board does not proceed with any kind of disciplinary action when there's any question whether or not there was a violation. So the board has never, in all the years of the board, there's never been a contested case by the board that the board has not prevailed. So they always prevail. And there are given, it's like I said, before we ever even get to hearing, the licensee is, or the respondent, if it's an unlicensed practice person, has been given every opportunity to work with the board to come to an agreement and a consent order on how to resolve the concerns presented.
I'd question if it's a totally stacked deck like that, why you'd want to proceed, but.
Well, I am looking at the policy, and I truly do believe that we need to be standardizing processes unless there's really a really significant reason for a profession to not be included. Further discussion. Okay. I want to talk to the members before we reschedule it, just to see where everyone is at, and then we will see if we can go to work session.
Great.
Okay. Any other questions?
Chair Monson-Anderson, thank you so much. And if you need anything from me, certainly feel free
Absolutely.
To get in touch.
Okay, and there's no one else to testify? All right.
If I could, my cautionary thing. You said they have never gone this route without having absolute just cause, but up till now, you've had to pay for it. Okay, so the thing is, if you can charge whoever you're complaining against for the costs of it, then you're kind of, in a way, scot-free on it, and so, which is why I think, in all things, if you're bringing somebody to the carpet and they win, they shouldn't have to pay the cost. And the way this is set up, even if they were to win, they'd pay the cost. And it's, it's kind of a lose or pay thing. I mean, if we're gonna take this action, whoever wins shouldn't have to pay the cost of it. And the way this is set up, no matter how it turned out, this practitioner would still pay the cost.
Senator Cruz, if the board chose to pursue the discipline, but if they, the recovery costs would not be, the board would in being just, would not assume recovery costs. And I, in talking to the medical board and the dental board and the physical therapist board. The physical therapist licensing board has never used that authority, although they've had it since 1970. The Board of Medicine has used that authority I think, three times in the last 20 years. The Board of Dentistry has used it twice, even though they have many contested cases. I didn't ask them the specifics on why they used them, but my guess is it's probably the repeat or the egregious offender who has malpractice insurance, who's going to cover their costs one way or the other. Yeah.
I understand
your concern,
but
board doesn't have insurance to cover them their costs.
No, I understand licenses. That. I guess what I'm looking at is, if we're looking at standardizing this thing, the fact that that the prevailing party should be held harmless in this, I have no problem with. But that would go for either side that ended up prevailing. So, I mean, if we're going to look at all boards and do this.
Perhaps, Madam Chair, if I might suggest that since you're planning on talking with us separately, we could see if we could get some information about exactly the statutory language around the other boards that are using right. this, and some history, as you've been describing to us, about how other boards have used this. So that would perhaps be helpful to us in thinking about it, and then we can bring that information back when we move on to work session. Does that seem reasonable, Senator Cruz?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll get back with you on where we're going with this. All right.
I'm just
going
to stay here.
She's on the next one, too.
Okay. So I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 109.
Can you go ask him why he's filming?
Okay.
This again, Madam Chair, thank you. Senate Bill 109 is coming to you at the request of the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Medicine, and it's authorizing currently only the chair of the board can issue a subpoena. This is authorizing a designee to issue a subpoena for the purpose of investigating and alleged violations.
Great. All right. Annie Moss.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Walsh. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Naturopathic Medicine. I'm here to ask for support of Senate Bill 109. Senate Bill 109 will authorize designees of the board to sign or to issue subpoenas for the purpose of investigating allegations of violations of laws in naturopathic medicine. Currently, as Sandy was saying, the statute only allows our subpoenas to be issued under the signature of the board chair. And if the board chair is present, that's no problem. But when the board chair lives in Southern Oregon, it can actually cause quite a delay. I believe there are maybe two other boards in the state that don't have designated persons within the agency that can sign subpoenas. I'm just here to ask to have that corrected.
I don't know much about subpoenas at all. You're judiciary.
I think it's a perfectly reasonable
thing. I do, too.
Huh?
I think it's perfectly reasonable.
No, this one's straightforward. I got no problem here.
No.
All right.
See, that's one out of two. That's not bad.
No, that's not bad. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay, with that, any other further discussion? Because I certainly don't have any questions on this bill. All right, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 109. And I think that's all. My administrator stepped out for just a second, so I'm just going to take a risk and adjourn.